were doing a program in Cleveland. And knowing how Bhakti Chitta Maharaj likes everything perfect, we tried to arrange this program so perfectly, down to the perfect vehicle to pick him up. So we had this perfect van to go pick up Maharaj and some of the other devotees. It was clean. It was just perfect. We only had a few minutes, and so this perfect van got to the place to pick him up. And because we had arranged every other thing perfectly, I wasn't thinking about my little raggedy dirty car, because I didn't think we would need that. But somehow or other, this perfect van broke down. And the only other vehicle was my little raggedy dirty car. But Maharaj is so kind and compassionate that he got out of the perfect van and he was going to ride in my dirty raggedy car. But we didn't want him to just get in like that, so we arranged to get some blanket. So we got a blanket for the seat, so it, instead of a group of devotees riding with Maharaj to his mom's house, it just happened to be Mother Krishnanandini, Bhakti Chitra Maharaj, and myself. So we were driving, and even though you have, you know, spurts of moments where you're able to have his, just that intimate association with him, this was one time I wanted to share with him why I loved him. So I said, Maharaj, I don't love you because, I said, even though you travel all around the world and you preach to so many people, I said, you know, you're a spiritual master, you're a sannyasi, you know, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I said, you're even an African king. I said, but all of those things are not the reason that I love you. I said, the reason that I love you is because you take a moment for me. And he does that for all of us. He would always take a moment to say, Mother Kamagiri, how are you doing today? You know, how have you been? How's your family? Is everyone doing okay? And just for him to take that moment, as he's taken ever since I've met him, he would always take a moment for me. And that's why I love him so much. And the one thing that I really appreciate is that Maharaj would allow all of us to love him. And he wasn't afraid to do that. And he never compromised any of his vows. He never compromised any of the principles. But he allowed us to serve him with love, without pushing us away, without being afraid. And for some of us, you know, just to see somebody and just to say, Haribo Prabhu, how are you doing? You know, because there had been times where you could even speak to a devotee and they wouldn't even say Haribo to you. You know, and he was so personal and caring and loving. And he reciprocated that love. Not that, you know, that you were just trying to love him and he didn't reciprocate that loving feeling back with you. But he was always trying to love you even more than you even tried to love him. So I feel very, very, very fortunate to be here, because if not had been for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj and Bhakrishwar Pandit Prabhu and so many others of you, Chandramali Maharaj, and some of my god brothers I still haven't had an opportunity to meet yet or have their association. But I told Maharaj on my last meeting with him, I said, Maharaj, I said, you are more than a brother to me. I said, in my life, you've actually represented Srila Prabhupada in my life. Because I didn't have the opportunity to serve my spiritual master directly. But by the mercy of my god brothers, they're allowing me to have that kind of service by serving them. And I pray that my service to Bhakti Sirtha Maharaj will continue by all of you allowing me to continue my service to him by some or other assisting and serving you in your service to Srila Bhakti Sirtha Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada. His Holiness Bhakti Sirtha Maharaj ki jai.
There was one other thing that I just wanted to share because not many people will ever hear this, and it wasn't a discussion that was so much available for everyone. But Maharaj was always telling me that he was going to come to Puerto Rico to visit. And each time he would make the plan, something would go wrong. So every time he would call me on the phone, I said, "Oh, you're not coming. That's okay. I know you're not coming." And he would say, no, Vakresh, I'm really coming." I said, yeah, okay, Maharaj, all right. So one day he actually showed up. He was at the airport. And he was on the phone. I said, "No, Maharaj, I know you're not there." He said, "Vakresh, send somebody to the airport to pick me up." I said, "Come on, Maharaj," because he would joke with me like that sometimes. I said, "Come on, Maharaj, I'm really busy. I'm doing." He said, "Vakresh, no, the devotees are here." And he took one devotee that was there at the airport and put him on the phone. He said, "Prabhu, you better send somebody to get Maharaj right away." So we arranged to pick him up. So the whole time he was there, He said, "Oh, this is so beautiful, so wonderful." I said, "Oh, Maharaj, I want to take you to a real special place. It's called the El Yunque. It's the rainforest." He said, "Oh, really? Yeah, I'd like to go." I said, "Maharaj, it's a beautiful waterfalls, parrots, big pools of clear crystal water cascading off of gigantic rocks, going down in these intricate patterns that would collect at one point and become like a natural jacuzzi, and we can just sit in the rocks." And he said, okay, take me. So I arranged it, but it was no one else. It was just he and I that went. So I said, "Maharaj, you got swimming trunks?" He said, "Yeah, I got trunks, no problem." I said, "Because we're going to go. You know, we're going to go. I'm going to take you to a real special place. We're going to climb up the rocks and we're going to go under the waterfalls and go up." He said, "Yeah, that sounds really wonderful. That's what I need." I said, "Okay." So we got there. Maharaj took off his dhoti and put on his trunks. And we climbed down these rocks. And we were just talking. He said, "Yeah, when we get to somewhere we can sit, I want to tell you something." He said, "I've never told anyone. I'm going to reveal something to you." I said, "Okay, Jai Raj, okay." So we get down to this part where the water shooting off. It had just rained a few days. And what happens in Puerto Rico is when the El Yunque is a rainforest where over 8 billion, just on this one area, over 8 billion gallons of water flows every year, just in one spot. So it's always humid and green and really, really lush and moss-covered rocks and, you know, parrots flying around and, you know, banana trees and mango trees and coconut trees and papaya trees and níspero tree. Anyway, a lot of trees. And so when I got Maharaj, we got down to this area and we were climbing. He was with me. He said, "Okay, hold on, Vakresh, hold on." And he would grab my shoulder. I said, "Okay, come on, Maharaj, we're going." So I took him out in this one spot. And these huge boulders where you have to hold on, but then you have to, like, duck into the water and swim you have to really swim strongly across to catch just one another rock so that you can get on the other side, and then the water's a little more peaceful. So Marge was holding on to him. We were holding on this boulder, and we were going like this. And he was holding on to my shoulder. And then just about when we had to dive under the water to go in, he said, "Hey, Bakresh, I guess I should tell you that secret now, huh?" And I said, "Oh, Marge, why don't we just wait till we get over to the other side?" He said, "No, I think I better tell you now." I said, "Well, okay, Marge, but we're submerged in the water up to here, and the water was rushing past. It was a real heavy duty sound." He said, "Well, you know how I would tell you sometimes I was a mama's boy." I said, "Yeah, but okay, but all right." But he says, "Well, I can't swim." And I said, "Maharaj, this is a hell of a time to tell me while we're out in the middle of the yunque." Maharaj, both of us, we can just die up here in the rainforest. And then he just looked at me with this huge smile and just said, "What a wonderful way to go." I said, "Maharaj, and then it'll be Vakreshwar Kill Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in the yunque." I said, "You are going to hold on to me, and somehow or other we're going to get across this water." I said, "I'm not going to go down like that, Maharaj." And somehow or other we figured it out, and I got him across. And he was just laughing and laughing and laughing. I said, "Marsh, that really wasn't funny." So we got across the Yunque River, and we sat. I said, "I'm going to find a kiddie pool area for you." So I found I found some rocks on the other side where the kids always play, and we sat in the water, and he just splashed in the water like, "Okay." And so after we cooled off, it was a really hot day, he just sat there and he started revealing his mind about some really deep and serious things, and it's how he was troubled about, you know, how he was being dealt with and so forth. And then he looked at me and just and said, "So," he said, "what else is new?" He said, "We've had to struggle 3 times harder in our life because of the kind of body that we've had." He said, "But we do this for Prabhupada. We do this for Prabhupada and Krishna." He said, "So no matter what the struggle is," he said, "for Krishna," he said, "just don't leave and never let them run you off." But then I said, and then he told me about going to Africa. And it was much like what Chandramali Maharaj was speaking on earlier. Actually, the things that he told me were, they were just shocking. They were he didn't just perform austerities. I mean, I think the communist country was easier than some of the austerities that he had to perform when he would travel in different parts of Africa. And he told me, and he always punctuated with, "And I was a mama's boy, I was the youngest kid. I didn't like," he said, "and we would be out in the hut somewhere, and I would hear these things, I'd hear these sounds, and I'd make them turn the light on, and there'd be scorpions crawling on the wall." And he said, "If my disciples knew some of the difficulties that I undertook coming and preaching in Africa," he said, "they wouldn't let me come back." He said, "I'm sure of it." But then after some talk, we were there for maybe 2 hours. And then he said, so I looked at him and said, because I realized it was getting dark. I said, Maharaj, okay, this is really wonderful. I'm glad you revealed all these intimate things to me, and it's really sweet. But now we got another problem. How are we going to get back across there? And then again, with the Jagannath smile, he said, well, I used you to get across, so I'm going to have to use you to get back. He said, and the same thing still holds. If we drown, we drown together. What a wonderful way to go. I said, so the same way we got back across. And Maharaj said to me, once we got across, he said, you know, this is what God brothers are for. He said that if one is a little weak in one area, we figure out how to be strong enough to pick him up and to help him get to the next place. He says, I'm going to ask you one thing, one favor. He said, if you ever see me getting a little weak, he said, please be there for me so that I can hold on to you to get across. I said, Maharaj, I'm sure that the way you're going right now in your devotional life, we are all simply trying to hold on to the vapors of your devotional service, because you are the acharya of trend setting. You are the acharya who shows his love for anyone in any situation. I said, so I'm sure that we'll always be chasing after you somehow or other. So just kindly just don't forget about me, whatever you do. And then I asked him, I said, I've never been able to serve with you so much. It was always in passing. So I said, so maybe you'll let me come sometime to Gita Nagari to serve. And he said, definitely. He said, always. The door will be open. So I've been in Gita Nagari now for almost 2 months. And I've never spent more than a day here. And I realized that he said he would somehow or other get me here to render some service. And so his transcendental trickery has come true. So I've been at the lotus feet of Radha Damodar for 2 months, somehow or other, by the mercy of His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and all of you wonderful devotees. And I thank you so much for every opportunity that you've given me to serve here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. The wireless mic is not working. In and out, okay. There are some more devotees we'd like to ask if they would share memories of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami. I see back in the back of the room His Grace Nuttama Prabhu. I'd like to ask you to come up, Nuttama Prabhu. And Mother Krishnandini and Kamagiri, they've served along with Bhakti Tirtha Swami for so many years, and they have a host of different pastimes with Maharaj. So I wanted to afford them an opportunity to actually at least give one more pastime with His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha. So it's just okay with them. Yeah.
Thank you.
One of the most striking things about Srila Krishnapada was the fact that he was a visionary. And, you know, when you were in his presence, you always had the sense that he was actually, we had difficulty working on one layer, but Srila Krishnapada was working on at least a dozen layers of projects on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. And he could simultaneously be operating in creating possibilities for his guru with 12 or more different projects at a time. And one concern that he had of all of you, I know this, was about women, children, and families. So we often talked about ISKCON and Grihastha Ashram and women, children, and families. And he would tell me, he said, Krishnandini, you need to do more, to step up. So finally, one day, I think we were in D.C. at the Institute. I can't remember the exact date. But he called me up and he introduced me and he said, and here's my god sister Krishnanandini, and she's in charge of the Grihastha Committee for ISKCON. And I was, that was really quite prophetic though. I just want to share that with you all, because that was years ago. And today, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, and along with other wonderful persons like Anutama, there's this committee called the Grihastha Vision Team. My dear husband, Tariq Prabhu, is a part of it. And it is a very extraordinary group of committed, dedicated, professional Vaishnavas who has this extraordinary vision of working together to improve the Grihastha Ashram in our movement. And I'm telling you, Srila Krishna Bhakti called that years ago. And currently, I am the coordinator of that team. Now, you all say what you want to say. So that was one thing. The other thing is real quick and very, very personal. You know, when Srila Prabhupada left, as many of our God brothers and God sisters have explained, each of us had to really go deeply within or whatever we had to do to find Prabhupada and be fixed in that. And it was a tumultuous time. And at one point in the 1980s, I was just feeling so tremendously alone. And I just was in a very, very bewildered state. And I remember Bhakti Tirtha Swami somehow calling me or something. And I just broke down on the phone and I was crying to him. And I didn't want to do that. I always like to maintain my equilibrium in front of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. But he was so loving that it just pulled that out of me. And he said, Krishnandini, what's wrong? You know. And I began to share with him some of the personal trials that I was going through in my life. And he just talked to me. He said, you know, Prabhupada gave you a very special mercy. And he said, you've come all this way. Don't give up now. And he said, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. And so he talked me through that. And then when he came to Cleveland, we met. And he met with some of my family members. And he really lifted a burden from my heart that enabled me to continue in my devotional service. And that's an extremely personal thing that an elder brother does for his younger sister. And I always, always remember him for that. And I thank him so much. The poem that I was going to recite is, don't be afraid of goodbye. Departing is necessary for those who meet again. And meeting again after moments or lifetimes is certain for those who are friends. And one thing I'm certain of is that Bhakti Tirtha Swami was at least a friend to us all. And it's our duty and love for him to be his friend. Hare Krishna.
I actually just arrived about a half an hour ago. I apologize I wasn't here sooner. We have Rath Yatra in Washington on Monday, so I was running around doing some things. I didn't get a chance to hear all the other presentations, which is what I really came to hear, wanted to do, was hear the wonderful realizations of my God brothers and God sisters and fellow Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. But just I'll just share a couple of thoughts. Maybe I don't know what's been said before, so I don't know what might be repeating or unnecessary. But when I was here earlier this week, when Maharaj was passing away, I was very much remembering my experience in 1977 when Srila Prabhupada passed away, and the time that's gone past since that time, and seeing how much work Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj had done to push on Srila Prabhupada's movement, and not just push on, but actually expand it in the way that a truly loving and committed disciple should try to do according to their capacity. He obviously had wonderful realizations that empowered him to do things that other people, many weren't sure were okay to start with, what to speak of being able to do it, and then having so much potency and sense of commitment to do that, to do those many things. I had the opportunity to work with him on a few different projects, although we were kind of in the same vicinity together. Physically, we didn't do a lot of things together, but we both attended the Religion Newswriters Conference a few years ago, and Maharaj came and spoke to that group of people. They were doing a presentation. There was a panel on religious, non-Christian religious experience of minorities. So Maharaj came as an African-American guru. They're very interested in hearing about someone who was involved in a Hindu tradition who was African-American. And also we participated a few years ago in one of the first Vaishnava Christian dialogues with devotees reaching out and speaking with people from the Christian tradition. That's now going on. I think next year is going to be its 10th year. So his schedule, of course, was very busy. He wasn't able to come every year, but he came one year and was made a very significant input there. So we had a chance to do a lot of fun, very interesting things. And I remember after the Religion Newswriters meeting, when he made his presentation, everybody that was there, there was just maybe three or four disciples were there as his kind of entourage and myself as kind of had the contact with the people. And at the end we sat down and he said, okay, how'd it go? What'd I do right? What'd I do wrong? How could I have done better? And he told me, he said, I always do this after a presentation because I'm always looking to see how I can improve. So I can understand from that meeting, here's a person that's so dedicated to always trying to do better for Prabhupada that despite the fact he had such a exalted position within our society and even with disciples who generally take a slightly different mood with their spiritual master, he really wanted feedback. He wanted to know how he could do better for Prabhupada. And of course, I think these days that's kind of accepted across the board. That's good leadership, as you're ready to take feedback from others. It's not always easy to do. It's certainly not my strong point. But I could see even in that situation, he was so committed to trying to figure out how he could always do better. And I think in part because of that commitment, Prabhupada let him see things that other people couldn't necessarily see. And that was a great gift that Krishna gave him, Prabhupada gave him. The last couple times I saw him, in fact, the last time he said something to me, and he said, I told you this the previous time. And I didn't remember that. So I thought, oh, this must be kind of important. I got to really pay attention here. Because he remembered telling me that, and I didn't. And he said that something that Prabhupada had said, but he put his own emphasis on it. And he said that we have to remember that whatever we try to do for Krishna, there'll always be challenges. But along with the challenges will come the mercy to be successful. And then almost under his breath he said, and the glory. And I found that really interesting because it was a lesson for me, because I could see here's someone, as has been discussed many times, who rose so high in terms of her own society. He was guru, GBC, sannyasi, and you know, a king, and spoke with big leaders, big politicians, people, you know, Muhammad Ali, so many people we hear about knew him and had a first name basis. But he had the spiritual potency and the intellectual insight to step back from that whole thing and to be able to share that, to say, this is an opportunity for service to my spiritual master, and along with this comes challenges, along with this comes the mercy to do it, and along with this comes the glory. And I could see he was saying in a sense, and we got to keep in touch with where that glory comes from and who that glory belongs to. And that itself is a challenge, and that itself is an opportunity. And one of the wonderful qualities that Maharaj had was that he could handle all of that. A lot of people can't handle all of that. In our society, we've seen a lot of people that haven't been able to handle all of that. And when I came to visit last few times in Gita Nagari, I was trying to understand Maharaj's gifts. And a couple of things I mentioned to him that he seemed to appreciate was, one, I told him I thought it was so gracious that he chose to pass away here in Gita Nagari, and maybe more importantly in this context, in the West. Because we all know we are aspiring spiritual people. And we all know we have a lot of baggage. And along with that baggage comes doubts and fears and concerns. And it's kind of like when you're a new devotee. You know, when you walk in and somebody says, here, this is spiritual food, eat what you want. And you go to grab it and they go, not with that hand. Not with that hand. And then when you go to get more, they tell you got to wash your hands, but don't step here, step there, don't go here, don't go there. It gets a little kind of scary. And if you're strong enough, you get over that hurdle, right? But even throughout the years, still there's kind of new territories to experience in Krishna consciousness. And I was very much thinking that as time passes, more and more devotees will be getting older and struggling with terminal diseases and different kind of difficulties. And we know not everybody's going to be able to get up and fly to India and pay for whatever that takes, or bring a caretaker along, or make all those arrangements, or leave their families. And I could just feel that in the future, people may be thinking, you know, at the time of death, you're supposed to think about Krishna, but if you're thinking, I'm so miserable, I couldn't even get to the holy places. You know, I don't really deserve Krishna's mercy because I couldn't even find somebody to take care of me. All these kind of doubts and sense of guilt could easily be there. And by Maharaj's mercy, I think this, for the ISKCON society, I think Prabhupada has used him, and Maharaj has desired this to kind of break a new frontier for us. That in the future we know nobody should ever have any doubt in our society for generations and generations to come. We know it's recommended you should go to a holy place to pass away, you should take shelter of the Dham. And we know philosophically, Prabhupada talked anywhere where Krishna is there. And of course, Rupa Goswami, they've all said, wherever Krishna is there, the chanting is there, that's the holy Dham. But still, it's like, yeah, but, you know, I should get on the plane because if you're really, you know, if you're up there, you know, everything's equal. But then again, if you get there, maybe you're okay. But Maharaj really kind of opened that border for us, that we don't have to have that fear. And as far as our mothers or our fathers or our children or our brothers or our sisters, our friends in the future that may not have that opportunity, it's okay. It's okay. Just think about Krishna. Wherever we are, we can just think about Krishna. I think that was one tremendous gift that will be one more gift that goes on and on and on and on and on. And that is just one example for me of what it really means to be an acharya. One who can set an example for weaker, and would not mean to offend any of us, but I would include myself in this category, lesser people that need those boundaries expanded. So I think as years go by, we'll all be looking to see, studying more carefully Maharaj's teachings and his lectures and his books and the examples that he gave, and seeing how many, many ways he really did expand things for our society. And he wasn't afraid to try new things. And as my first little story there with getting feedback, he also wasn't afraid to be instructed and sometimes even corrected, as we all need to be, how we can do better. That mood of humble service to Prabhupada and to Krishna. Jai Shishi Radha Damodar Ki Jai. When Radhanath Maharaj and I were, at least the last night, I got a chance to have Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's association's darshan. Radhanath Maharaj went into the room and I had been able to chant for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and got to go in. And Maharaj was saying to us, as I think he said to everybody here many, many times, he said, you have to make sure the heart is kept in the movement. I was thinking, I'm sitting here next to like the two, like the right and left ventricle of ISKCON, you know. I was really thinking, I was reminded of, I guess it's the third canto. I mentioned Sarada Maharaj afterwards, like Krishna's speaking to Uddhava, and Maitreya somehow kind of stumbled into the forest and overheard this conversation. And it's very wonderful to hear Maharaj's emphasis on that, as he always has given. And I'll just, remembering about Prabhupada's passing away, and now looking back almost 30 years ago, and perhaps for all of those of us as disciples or followers, those who appreciate Bhaktivedanta Maharaj in different ways, to remember that, to always keep in mind, I think it's important that when Prabhupada passed away, so much had been accomplished when he left this mortal plane. So much had been accomplished, but so much more was meant to be accomplished. And actually, something, just maybe a little word of caution and perhaps maybe something to help us over the hurdle of the separation from especially the disciples that are here. When Prabhupada passed away, there were some disciples who had been very blessed to have his vapu, his physical association. And when he left this world, it was extremely difficult for them to kind of make that transition. And some people that had that special physical association, it was more difficult for them to make the transition to continue being a servant in the mission. And I'm thinking here, there's so many people here that have been coming every week or staying here for months or weeks at a time. Like I heard the other day, there was, 300 new disciples were initiated in Russia just a few weeks ago. They don't have this opportunity. They don't have this association. And there's lots and lots of other people around the world, disciples that didn't have this. But their position is non-different from those that were here as caretakers for days and weeks and months. It's different rasa in some ways, but in other ways it's not different. And I would just request everyone that we keep in mind, as it's described throughout the Shastra, that the spiritual master comes and teaches by example and lays the path for us, but then leaves the trail for us to go forward. And that the most important service to the spiritual master is to execute the mission of the spiritual master. That never changes. It's not different if he's here or if he's just left or 40 years from now or 500 years from now. The mission stays the same. And at this time of feeling intense separation, it's also an extremely important time for us to pray to Krishna to let us internalize that commitment. Because it's easy to just think in terms of the vapu. Now the vapu's not here, well, I'm lost. What do I do? The vapu is really, the spiritual master appears and uses everything he has to help push on the mission of his spiritual master. And when that method of service isn't there anymore, that his mission, his determination, his desire for this world doesn't stop. So now it's the disciples' responsibility to really understand what was that mood, what was that commitment. And like I was thinking the other day, it's so amazing how many people Bhaktivedanta Maharaj brought to Krishna consciousness. I have ran a preaching center in Boulder, Colorado for a couple of years. There was like one girl came, 30 years, you know. She's not even that serious. I look around, I think there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And all of you, actually, I know Maharaj's desire is for all of you to become at least that effective in making devotees. It may seem like impossible, but that really should be our mood, that somehow let me take that torch forward. Not just think that he did so much and now he's not physically here, so now what's going to happen? No. He did so much, he's not physically here, because he expects all of you, all of us, to keep that going on. That's the parampara system. And I know sometimes I hear younger devotees talking about the good old days in ISKCON, the early days, the pioneer days. And I'm thinking, what are they thinking? You know, it's like, so Prabhupada was here physically in his Western preaching or worldwide preaching for 11 years. But, you know, this movement's meant at least 10,000 years, right, according to the Shastra. So pioneer period according to who? You know, there's the first 11 years of the pioneer period, then there's the next 30 years or 40, then there's the next 100. I mean, you know, the pioneer period means hundreds of years. So sometimes we're so much wishing we were part of that other pioneer period. We're watching this pioneer period like fly right by. And, you know, when we die, people will be looking back and saying, you know, geez, I wish I was back there when Anudama and Krishnanandini were around. But, you know, maybe Krishnanandini and I, we're just sitting around wishing we were back there. But luckily, there's a few people that are serious and really took it to heart, and they're making it happen now. The same way Bhakti Tirthamaraj pushed ISKCON ahead. Prabhupada, you know, broke open the door. Lord Chaitanya broke open the door. His followers all the way down. Prabhupada expanded even further. Bhakti Tirthamaraj expanded it further. It's not like we should think, okay, it's all done. It's all done. You know, we got, you know, one farm in Pennsylvania. We got a couple places in Washington, D.C. You know, the whole world's Krishna conscious. As soon as you hear people say, you know, Prabhu, did you see? Did you see in the paper today? What? Well, they mentioned Krishna in the paper. Yeah. You know, Krishna Dry Cleaners opens on South Street. We got a lot more to do than that. We have a lot more to do. So, you know, like it described, those beautiful poems, you know, Vaishnavas never die. In dying, they live to spread the holy name around. And they do that through all of us as unqualified and insincere and so many obstacles that we all may individually have. We're it. You know, like Prabhupada said, right? He gave the comparison to himself and Lord Ramchandra. He said, Lord Ramchandra, you know, conquered Lanka with an army of monkeys. You know, famous story. And he looked around and said, "Just so I'm trying to do what I can. Just see the similarities." So that's still there. It's a fact. I mean, we are the monkey army for Krishna. It's amazing he has so little to work with, isn't it? But somehow or other, you know, Krishna's got a plan. And as he told Arjuna, it's all done. You just have to play your part. So I would just end with that thought of meditation. I was thinking about our Prabhupada, and when Prabhupada passed away, and it was like, okay, we got to... Somehow or other, Krishna said, okay, you guys are next. You know, I mean, somehow or other, you got to carry it on. You're small, tiny servants of Prabhupada, but now you got to carry it on. If you understand what his mission is about, you have to carry it on. In the same way. And we can do that. We've heard probably so many stories about Bhakti Tirthamaraj's apparent humble beginnings to such wonderful, amazing things that he was able to do because he was so dedicated to Prabhupada. So, especially disciples, if you maintain that same dedication, you can be empowered in the same way. That's the mission of the Parampara. So, I'm very grateful to have, as so many have said, the honor of having any association with Bhakti Tirthamaraj. And actually, the last time I saw him, I walked in, I just couldn't help myself. I just walked over and gave him a kiss on the cheek. As I could, you know, I was like, Maharaj, I got to kiss you. And a couple of people said,
I'd just like to share one of the very important aspects that Bhakti Chaitanya offered back in the early 80s after he had taken sannyas. Because during that time, a lot of the women, we didn't really have many opportunities to get so close to the gurus and sannyasis. So when the gurus and sannyasis would visit the Cleveland temple, and outside of Bhagavatam class, they would go up into like the office and they would have darshan. But the office was not very big, so all the men would just crowd the whole room and part of the hallway outside. So the women would be so far away that we could never hear anything. And we would just be lamenting and wishing that we could trade bodies with the brahmacharis just for the moment so that we would be able to at least hear whatever they were talking about. So we were always lamenting that we didn't get our opportunity to ask some of our personal questions or some of, you know, some of the philosophical questions that we didn't quite understand. So by the mercy of Bhakti Tirthamaraj, he started a woman's darshan. And it was so wonderful for us. So when he said that he would have a woman's darshan, he decided that whenever he would come, he would pick out one day where he would have, only the women could come and have darshan. So this is how I first started cooking for Maharaj. So what we would do is we would go in the kitchen and we would make unlimited preparations. And even though we knew that he wasn't going to eat all of it, but we just wanted to offer, you know, we were just so excited that he was going to give us this time and we wanted to offer him something. So we would go down in the kitchen and we would prepare all of these, you know, sweets and everything we could think of. And then we'd come up with all these trays, you know, and he'd be sitting behind the desk and he would be shaking his head and laughing. And we would set all these trays around and he would just taste a little bit of everything. But we already knew if we gave him big portions, then we would always get the maha. But he was so kind that, you know, he opened his heart and he allowed us the opportunity to also practice our Krishna consciousness on a practical level for us as women and women bodies. And it gave us such hope that we too could somehow or other, you know, feel like we were also trying to be devotees and not just, you know, in the background, on the outskirts. But it's an advantage being in the back because you get to see all of the other things in the front. And when everybody else leave out of the room, if you stay back, you get a chance to get the nectar of whatever remnants are left behind by the gurus and sannyasi. So we learned that trick. But, you know, Maharaj was just so merciful in so many ways, you know, and he was always looking for ways to connect us together and help us to learn how to have that, have loving relationships with each other. And he was always speaking about that, and he exemplified that in his life. So I just wanted to share that one point, and I think our time is running out. So thank you all so much for being here and associating and serving each other in Maharaj's memory. And we pray that it'll spread like wildfire and continue eternally. And the one thing I have to say is the only thing that kept me going day by day, even when Maharaj was preaching in Africa, was that I knew he was coming back and I was going to see him again. And I would be able to make something or clean his room or do his laundry or, you know, something. It was always some service I looked forward to doing for him. So Mara said that he was going to prepare a place for all of us to come back. So I'm going to hold on to that, knowing that I'm going to see him again and I'm going to be able to do some service. Srila Krishna Pad Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So I'd like to ask Mother Charuni, would you please come up? And while we're waiting for her to come up, Anutama shared some pastime with His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami. He walked into the room and he said, "I just got to give you a kiss," and kissed him on the cheek. That was amazing that he shared that. And I was just thinking about Dasarath. Dasarath called from Arizona when Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was in the hospital. And Dasarath spoke to me and he said, "Ekaveer, I need you to do one big favor. I need you to lean over to Bhaktivedanta Maharaj and give him one big kiss on the top of his forehead." He said, "Come on, Ekaveer, you can do it. You can do it, Ekaveer." And I said, "No, that's right, I can't do it." He said, "No, Prabhu, please, please do it." I said, "Okay, Prabhu, I'll do it." And so I walked into the hospital room. He said, "Who's that on the telephone?" I said, "That was Dasarath Prabhu." And I leaned over, I said, "And he told me to give you one big kiss on your forehead." And I leaned towards him and he looked at me with his eyes. And as I leaned over and I looked at him in his eyes and he was staring at me. And then I said, "But I guess I could tell him I forgot." And then I just kissed my hand and put it on his head. His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Ki.
Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada and to Gurudev Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. I hope I don't cry. It's hard to know where to begin. Maharaj has been so kind and gentle and encouraging in kind of revitalizing my Krishna consciousness since Srila Prabhupada left. And I feel deeply that he has done the same for the entire movement to kind of repersonalize and give compassion to our movement as Srila Prabhupada always intended it to be. And I just saw Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj being so normal, so sweet, so loving, so fun. I wish I could, you know, be kind of witty or something and explain some of, but everybody knows how fun he was. One of the first times he came to my house, or our house, and blessed it and created further good fortune for us. He had a, it was quite spontaneous. He had a sledding party. Well, I had never heard of a guru or a swami coming to a sledding party. And, you know, we just quick got everything together and the devotees came and we had to find as many sleds as we could. And Vrindavaneshwari was there luckily and took pictures. If any of you want to see, they're quite outrageous, as Maharaj says of himself, how outrageous. And, he would always win every race. He told us later in some of his weeks that he so kindly prepared us for his departure. Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, he would meet with some of you were fortunate enough to be here. And he would tell, you know, some of his secrets of how he always won. He would get the best sled and take the lightest person with him, and, you know, and they'd say, ready, set, go, but he'd always go on the ready or the set part. He wouldn't wait. And, you know, he just always planned wonderful events where the devotees could have such camaraderie, such depth of real family kind of, you know, relationship to develop these things. It was just outrageous. It was, you know, just something straight from the spiritual world that some of us were not quite accustomed to. I remember being very just moved, overwhelmed, and I said to Maharaj, you know, Krishna's in the center. I understand Srila Prabhupada taught us that way, but I'm still having difficulty because of the paradigm that we came from, understanding how to deal with the devotees in our relationships. Like, really, where does that fit into Krishna being in the center? And he said, you have to remember that in the spiritual world, Krishna is in the center. Everyone is focused on Krishna. But they're loving each other like anything, he said to me. So I saw him in action, being that loving father, friend. He brought me out of the closet. I was too scared to ask a question. And he got me to be able to speak. Sorry, one time I quoted on Nasta Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityang Bhagavata Sevaya, and after that I was, you know, he got me to speak a little something, and I said that how wonderful Bhagavatam class is. I can't remember the occasion. And afterwards I heard from some of his loving disciples how he said, she is very attached to Bhagavatam, she should give Bhagavatam class. And I'm like, okay. we'll see about this one. But he has trained his disciples so marvelously, so lovingly, that they actually, two in particular, Mother Indrani and Advaita Acharya, they took me by the heart and led me into a realm that I had no clue that I would ever have an ability. And Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj just had a way of believing in you. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
That's thank all of His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, His God brothers and God sisters for sharing their loving pastimes. And so let's give them another round of applause.